There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Hello and welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast, a roundup of the best bits of today's very special show, live from the Burj Al Arab on Sunday, February the 16th.
150 top CEOs and government officials converging in Dubai's iconic structure here to discuss current events in the MENA region and how it's impacting business. All of them have RSVP'd to our next guest. He is the founder and the chief executive of Emerging Markets Intelligence and Research, Amir. And he is no stranger to the Business Breakfast. Mr. Trevor McFarlane, great to see you.
Tom, Richard, it's wonderful to have you guys with us. Absolute pleasure. And the best thing about it is seeing how you guys run this live show like an orchestra. It's beautiful to see.
Well, I think it's swans, you know. It looks okay over there, but we are paddling below and underneath. But we'll get through, that's for sure. Listen, let's get your thoughts on this. Congratulations for bringing together such a great list of influencers, if you like. Proper influencers. Influencers of industry around one table. This is not your first rodeo. Amir have been doing this for several years now. Tell us the reasoning behind the boardroom meeting. Where did that all come from?
Sure. So it started in 2013, and the idea of it is that we do it every quarter, and essentially at the very beginning when it was me on my own and my laptop in my kitchen in Dubai Marina at the time, the idea was I had been working at another organization and lots of people had been telling me, CEOs saying that, look, we need the macro story, we need to know what's happening, but at the same time these are government-led economies. And therefore, we need to know what the government is thinking. We need to know what's coming down on what's on the horizon. And I thought that I have an opportunity here to really bring the public sector and private sector together, but at the right level, and keep it a private meeting so it doesn't turn into useless platitudes.
Mm. In terms of the focus, obviously the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia very much top of the agenda today. Has that been something that a number of your clients have been asking to discuss around such tables?
Oh, 100%. So for the last several years, our Q1 briefing has always been on Saudi. So this is nothing new. But as you see and as you know and everybody knows, the transformation in Saudi over the last few years has given an extra incentive for multinationals, but also the big, large family trading conglomerates to also participate in the transformation in Saudi Arabia. You also look at what's happening across the broader region and indeed within the global economy, and you're starting to look for where are the opportunities, where are the pockets of opportunity. And Saudi still with this transformation represents a lot of that. And even though if you look at the budget for 2020 in Saudi, government spending is beginning to taper off slightly. The budget will be about 2.7% less, primarily being driven by the budget deficit creeping up. But then you take into account you have the almost $30 billion from Aramco going into the public investment fund and the domestic spending that's going to happen into some of these sectors in Saudi. And that's where you see a lot of companies interested in terms of how do we capture these opportunities that are going to be on the horizon. And that's really what we're talking about today. What are the opportunities in Saudi? But at the same time, what are the challenges? Mm. Saudi historically has never been the easiest place to do business. They've made a lot of progress over the last few years in terms of the reforms that they've introduced. And now what we want to see is, particularly from the private sector perspective, is how those reforms, the rubber meets the road. And there's traditionally been a gap, like in any country. You have big headline announcements making into the headlines of newspapers and onto the Business Breakfast. And then naturally enough, there is a gap between institutional reform because human beings have to go out and actually enact that institutional reform. Now my sense is we're starting to feel that. When we do surveys of our members, we're starting to feel that those reforms are having an impact in the economy, and you see it from private sector activity as well.
I know you've got to get out and meet and greet, and so just quickly, just to round up, is there still opportunity in Saudi Arabia? A lot of our friends who have been down there for a while now have done very, very well, but for companies still looking at opportunity, is that still something that is available?
100%. This is only really, in many ways, the beginning. Remember, it's the Vision 2030, okay? So this is and that in itself is an aspirational document. So you have to remember that as we move along over the next decade, there's going to be more reforms that will be made. There will be more spending and investment from the government, and that's going to create new opportunities. And I would argue that really what's happening in Saudi is going to be a multi-decade project.
Trevor McFarlane, it's always great to catch up with you. I'm sure we'll see you before the end of the show. Thank you so much indeed for not just joining us live here, but also for inviting us down to, which isn't a, it's not a shabby studio, is it, Rich, for today? It's certainly not shabby.
We'll take it.
We'll take it. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, and thank you for the Business Breakfast for coming, because as you know, we have private meetings, but honestly, we were talking about this in the office. Having the Business Breakfast here, when you look at all of the options in terms of media, for me, it was only the Business Breakfast, because this is the radio show that everybody listens to.
He can come back. Thanks so much indeed to you, Trevor McFarlane.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Live from the Burj Al Arab, from the Emir Boardroom private meeting, delighted to welcome our special guest this morning, the Governor of the Saudi Arabia General Investment Authority, His Excellency Ibrahim Al Omar. Your Excellency, good morning. Thank you for being with us.
Good morning again. Thank you for inviting me.
You're going to be talking at this closed-door event about investment in Saudi Arabia. And your last year was a really strong year, a 54% increase in the number of international companies setting up in Saudi Arabia. It was a record year for foreign direct investment. Tell us how you did that.
First of all, 2019 was a great year for us. We have welcomed more than 1,131 new international investors, and this represents 54%, as you mentioned, compared to 2018, and it's three times more than 2017. And our FDI grew by about 9% in 2019, despite the declining trend of global FDI. So the question here is, why investors have decided to come and invest in Saudi Arabia? Maybe I can highlight two reasons. The first reason is the market opportunity. Saudi Arabia is the seventh largest stock market globally. We are a growing G20 economy. And when it comes to our resources, our people are the most important assets. 58% of our population is below the age of 30. They are well educated with a very strong purchasing power when it comes to our natural resources. In addition to the oil and gas and other natural resources, our mineral resources are worth more than $1.3 trillion.
So in terms of the kind of sectors that people are investing in, which are the big ones at the moment that you are seeing?
In sectors, as you know, Saudi Arabia, we are the central bank of petrochemical sector. It's the second pillar of our GDP. Our plan, the mining sector, to be the third pillar of GDP in 2030, which we think will contribute about $70 billion. We have new sectors, the entertainment. As you know, we just opened the e-visa. We have announced major deals last year, because this is a new sector. Triple Five committed to invest $10 billion in entertainment, and they will build the largest indoor entertainment center globally, and many other investments in that sector. Health sector also is another big sector. So I think we have many sectors inside the renewable sector. Also, it's a big sector. We have a plan to produce about 57 gigawatts by 2030, 27 gigawatts by 2023, of which 20 gigawatts will be solar. That's also another big sector.
Well, the intersection of entertainment and hospitality, Tom, you were in an event in Saudi Arabia, in Al Ula, just a couple of weeks ago. It was a polo event, partly sport, partly tourism.
Exactly that, but it really did open my eyes up to the potential for large sporting events. It was the first ever horse polo event held in Saudi Arabia. It was a great success. When you look at the headlines that have come out with the staging of WWE, world-class boxing fights, the golf, which has grown substantially in recent weeks, equestrian sports aplenty. I just wanted to ask you, Your Excellency, about the sort of potential for sports events. Obviously, sports events that have been consulted on or brought international sportsmen and sports people, but also organizers to the event. How important is sport in terms of hosting events for Saudi Arabia moving forward?
you know, sport, of course, is very important. And any investment journey starts with a visit.
Yeah.
So Saudi Arabia is open for business. Sport is one of the sectors that we are expecting big investments to come in. We're expecting $1.8 billion investments in the next 5 years.
So my question, my final question is your message to companies that are based here in Dubai and the UAE thinking about Saudi Arabia, particularly small and medium-sized companies? If you're the likes of Philips or Accenture, these big multinationals, then they have a hotline to your organization. But to small and medium-sized enterprises, how do they get involved in the Saudi economy? How do they invest in Saudi Arabia? How do they sell into Saudi Arabia?
You know, small and medium companies, they are the main driver of any economy. And, you know, the benchmark, the contribution of a small and medium companies to the GDP is about above 70%. So they are the main driver. So they are most welcomed. We have special plans. We have special funds for the small and mediums. We have special programs to support the small and medium, because the need of small and medium is different than the big organizations. They can contact SAGIA, and we will share with them all the programs they need to be able to operate and work in Saudi.
Well, we're going to put all of those contact details on our websites. We'll put them on our various social media channels as well, so people know how to get in touch. We're going to leave it there, because not because I've run out of questions, but because I know you are much needed within the private meeting room of the EMEA boardroom, which is the reason you're here. So, Your Excellency, with that, shukran jazilan. Appreciate your time for this morning. His Excellency Ibrahim Al Omar, the Governor of the Saudi Arabia General Investment Authority. Thanks for joining us on the Business Breakfast.
Afwan, and thank you very much for giving me the chance to speak here.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Now we continue our coverage of the EMEA boardroom event, Tom, here at the Burj Al Arab.
Indeed we do. We're down here broadcasting live from the Burj for this, the most exclusive gathering of top business and government officials in the Middle East. It is EMEA Boardroom 2020. It's the Q1 gathering. And Saudi Arabia is very much the focus. 2020 and beyond. A who's who of industry influencers and leaders coming together behind closed doors, around one table, for a good, frank, open discussion. And one man who will be part of that is a man who is currently advising CEOs on digital transformation, including CEOs looking to get a foothold into Saudi Arabia. He is, of course, the former founding CEO of Do, a digital transformation expert. Osman Sultan joins us live from our broadcast position. Good morning to you.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Lovely to see you yet again. And you're no stranger to these EMEA boardrooms. You've just been telling me off air that this is something that you've been a part of pretty much since the beginning.
Yes, regularly. I found this a very interesting format for gathering of decision makers. It's really, I'm sorry to say that, it's no press in the room. Actually, it gives, I don't want to, no offense, gentlemen.
That's all right. That's fine. We're fine.
It gives a certain freedom for just, you know, these CEOs and these decision makers to just have a very frank discussion. And I found the insights, economical insights, the reading of the events, quite sharp, quite insightful. Yes, I've been a regular guest of these. I find them very interesting, and I find I'm lucky of being invited every time. Actually, I'm a member of the EMEA, so this is why, of the EMEA gathering.
Amazing to have you with us here, and amazing to have such a font of knowledge when it comes to advice to CEOs, specifically looking to Saudi Arabia at the moment. Listen, Osman, you have been in the region for a long time. You've spoken to CEOs throughout that entire time. You've seen markets go up and down, etc. How exciting and how much of an opportunity is Saudi Arabia for companies, for CEOs at the beginning of 2020?
Well, actually, if you look at all the components that should allow us to see, well, is it interesting or not, Saudi Arabia scores very high on these components. Of course, you have the economic weight of the country within the region. Its percentage of the GDP within the entire region. Second thing, they are in a very rapid transformation on all fronts. It's not only about technology, the social transformations, human transformations that are happening in terms of people being empowered now to do more and more. And bear in mind that you have a very young population. On the 33 million population in Saudi Arabia, you have, I think, more than 58% that are under the age of 30. So it's fundamental. Employment is an important issue. Finding tracks for a sustainable employment framework in the country is fundamental for the Saudi leadership. And this is why, in my opinion, Envision 2030, you see this focus on what we call the digital transformation, what we call an ICT framework to drive that. Vision 2030 is clearly want to diversify the economy in Saudi Arabia and move it from a natural resource economy to an economy based on digital, on big digital initiatives.
So how do companies here in the UAE take advantage of this? I mean, we know you as you were the former CEO of Do for well over a decade. And for a huge organization like that, how do you look at Saudi Arabia? We know, for example, you know, Etisalat has had an operation there for a long, long time. But when you are that big, running that large an organization, how do you tap into the opportunity?
Well, I don't think that it would be relevant to speak specifically about the telecom sector. The telecom sector, I mean, having licensed operator is a different manner. But if you consider that today, every sector will have to move into a rapid digital transformation, then you can see that the opportunities are huge. Now, for our audience, let me simplify a little bit how I see a digital transformation. Yeah. I think that there is a simple, because you have a lot of buzzwords. Digital transformation, people will tell you this is, yeah, the Internet of Things, this is 5G, this is AI, this is blockchain, this is, and indeed, it's a little bit of all that. Now, the model that I find quite interesting when framing this type of transformation is quite simple. Everything is sensing, everything is connected, and everything is smart, in that order. Everything we touch, whether in our domestic life, whether in public life, whether in transportation, whether in our offices, etc., will become a sensor that will be able to just send data. You connect all these, and this, on this first layer, everything sensing, this is where you have things like the Internet of Things, machine to machine, etc., all these concepts. Everything connected, you take the 5G and all the promise that we have for that to disrupt a lot of things that we're doing, or even in terms of, you know, the architecture of that, things like blockchain. And then everything smart, you add intelligence to this huge amount of data that you will be gathering. Mm-hmm. When you take this, just imagine the number of companies that are working along all these layers here in the UAE, in other parts of the Gulf, in other parts of the world, and the opportunities that having this rapidly moving in a country like Saudi Arabia, with its economic potential, with its potential market, with the population that is so eager to change. Just to illustrate that how digital is important, Saudi Arabia was the first country to give citizenship to Sophia. Mm. Sophia is AI-driven social robot. Mm. That is. So that's what I call the anecdote. But if it indicates something, it's the willingness there to really put digital transformation and put the ICT, what we call more generally, at the heart of this transformation. The second thing, on a more serious note, a number. Today, Saudi Arabia is the highest country in terms of download of YouTube per capita, mm. YouTube video per capita. And today, 68% of consuming videos is done through digital channel rather than TV. So it indicates not only that you have a very young population, but you have a population that has a great appetite for all things digital. Mm. And that is an excellent base. You start always. That's an excellent market. The question before that was addressed to me is, why would companies here, companies from around the world, would be interested to go along that digital transformation? I think this is where the answer is.
So a question to you about the mindset of CEOs here as well, because you've been doing business here in the region for many years. Do people need to approach, from a CEO's perspective, if CEOs are just assuming that if they set up an office in Riyadh or Jeddah tomorrow, they are going to do very well regionally, is that the wrong approach? Do you have to approach doing business in Saudi Arabia in a different mindset?
Listen, I can't say that I'm an expert on that. I haven't set or started a business in Saudi Arabia. As you said, I'm more in an advisor role here. But for me, I think that companies who are interested in this field, in the digital transformation field, will have to work on really a holistic approach. It's not about technology only. The challenge is that people consider that only it's about technology. I bring you technology and it's... No, these are multi-dimensions ecosystem. You need to look at the regulatory aspects. You need to look at the sustainability of this business, business plans, etc. So this is where CEOs or companies, but I guess CEOs, they do this generally. This is not, you know, this is the usual recipe when, specifically for the guests that we have here today, they're used to this type of methodology. And it's not as simple as that. It's not a binary thing. I go and I set the business there and the business will come. No, it's a little bit more complicated than that.
Osman, very quickly, let's talk a little bit about what you're doing now. We were chatting earlier over a cup of coffee, reminiscing that it's 15 years since your first interview on the Business Breakfast.
Yes, absolutely.
when Malcolm
2005.
Malcolm gave you a grilling about this new startup telephone company that you were CEO of called Do, and you stepped down as CEO after 15 years, just a few months ago. Tell us a bit about what you're doing now.
Well, actually, I'm first of all, if I may say, and it's not business. I'm trying to enjoy, after 24 years being a CEO, 22 of these being a CEO of publicly traded company, which is a different kind of pleasure, of pressure, I'm trying to relax a little bit. I have stepped down from my former position on the 1st of January, so this is weeks ago. I would like to prolong this a little bit, but generally speaking, as we said, I'm playing a role, I'm intending to go to non-executive roles, more on an advisory side, sitting on boards, advising boards. Public speaking has always been something that I really am fond of. Telling the story, I think that with the complexity of things, we were saying that digital world, the digital transformation, a lot of buzzwords are there, but they all come together in a structured manner. So telling the story is something that is important. I like that. And the third and important thing, I've been involved in the last years in my personal capacity in the entrepreneurship ecosystem. I've been investing with some young entrepreneurs. I've been sitting on boards of some companies. I've been mentoring, and I'm continuing to do this. And it's a real pleasure. That's really where you see an energy that is quite refreshing.
That might be your definition of taking it easy. It probably wouldn't be mine. I'd have my feet up on a beach, Thomas, after 25 years as a CEO. What about you?
Wouldn't be far behind you, that's for sure. No, you certainly deserve all the plaudits that come your way, Osman. Just another quick one to wrap up before we let you get on with proceedings today. A lot of chat about the relationship, which is an extraordinary relationship between the United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia.
Absolutely.
At the moment. Brothers in arms, working forward on so many different fields. Given the fact that Dubai has set itself up as something of a digital hub for the region in recent years, given the potential of Saudi Arabia as well, is this a path that they can share together, or dare we mention the rivalry word?
Well, I don't think so. I think, and I've been three times in Saudi Arabia in the past 3 months, giving lectures and sitting with some people and discussing. I've been asked. No, I think that there is really this wisdom of saying we look at what works, But of course, what works here is not necessarily working in the same format there. So this is, and that's, in my opinion, is common sense. So I can see that there is a lot of wisdom in doing this. There is eagerness to go fast because at the top you have somebody that is really giving a pulse that things should go fast. I saw that. I went the first time and the last, I went, I think, in November, in October, and then I came back in December. Believe me, there was a change. You can feel this change in the tempo and the rhythm. And young people, bright young people, were quite eager to make a difference and make things move.
Listen, I can't thank you enough for giving us your time, extra time this morning as well. All the best with the new ventures. All the best with trying to find that balance as well, Osman. A bit of downtime for your good self, sir. Thank you so much indeed for joining us for yet another interview on Dubai Eye, another to put onto the list of things done. Osman Sultan, thank you so much indeed for joining us. Enjoy your day.
Thank you for hosting me.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast. The Business Breakfast's Pick of the Papers.
And Natasha Thomas has left the ARN News Centre behind and has joined us in the 27th floor of the Burj Al Arab Hotel. Natasha, good to see you. Thanks very much indeed.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Taking one for the team this morning, leaving all the office and coming out to the Burj.
Who would have, you know, said no to that?
Let's look at some of the top stories you guys are covering, beginning with the UAE stepping up preparations for the human journey to Mars.
Yes, so the UAE is taking more steps towards establishing a human colony in Mars. Applications are now open for an 8-month-long mission in Moscow, which will simulate the living conditions on the red planet. Now, the project is called UAE Analog Mission Number 1, and the aim is to study the long-term effects of isolation on the human body and mind.
So it's isolation as much as the physical conditions.
Exactly. So it's research, isolation, and just to basically simulate what it's like to live in the red planet. The criteria for selection are very simple. So this is being run by the Mohammed bin Rashid Space Center. They're looking for Emirati candidates aged between 28 and 55 who are passionate about space and can communicate in English. Now, preferred occupations include physicians, medical investigators, physiologists, biologists, life support specialists, and IT and electronics professionals. Shortlisted applicants will be reviewed and interviewed, and the finalists will undergo various tests. And then eventually they will become part of what's being called Crew One, which will participate in this research.
Not tempting in the slightest. Going what we did going to space a few weeks ago, absolutely brilliant. Love to do that. 7 days on the space station, be great fun. 8 months in isolation, not having it, Tom?
No, not for me. I'm afraid it is not my final frontier, well, that's for sure.
Well, you both don't qualify anyway.
Our good officers are not required.
I need a comms person, you know.
There are a lot of people out there who are obviously interested, and I think long-term it'll benefit them as well, because if they go through these laboratory tests and experiments, eventually they'll learn so much from it, and who knows, they will be part of that team which eventually, you know, sets up the mission to Mars.
I should be watching from afar and admiring rather than participating. Tell me about the Dubai Police, because they've arrested a man for vandalizing cars.
Yes, so this particular individual, he apparently was taking revenge on his ex-fiancée, and what he did was he poured liquid solvent over her and her family's 3 vehicles. Now, Dubai Police have tweeted about this. They have sent information out to the public saying, look, we'll catch you whatever you do. So apparently the victim and her family filed a police with filed a police complaint saying their cars were mysteriously damaged while parked outside their house in Al-Quds. CCTV footage of the victim's residence showed masked men in motorcycles coming up to the vehicles and then pouring chemical liquids over the cars before fleeing the crime scene. And thanks to the latest technology, which police have, you know, deployed across the city, they were able to identify one of the offenders because he fit their criminal profile. He was wearing the same clothes he wore when the crime was committed, and eventually he was arrested and he confessed, saying he committed the crime after an argument with his former fiance.
Good stuff, the long arm of the law. Very quickly, all roads leading to Expo 2020 are?
Yes, indeed. So apparently the last two phases of roads leading to the Expo 2020 site are now complete. Construction work included a flyover which links Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed Road and Expo Road, as well as two flyovers on Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed Road. So people who drive down that road, you know, they were seeing a lot of construction this morning. They probably aren't. It's smooth sailing across. So basically the whole idea is to obviously ensure that traffic flows smoothly to and from the site of Expo 2020. There are 7-kilometer-long bridges, roads totaling 43 kilometers, and 3 interchanges. So a lot of work has gone down there. And obviously, the RTA has completed all phases leading to the site well ahead of the opening of Expo 2020.
Very quickly, tell me about the new Usain Bolt.
Yeah, so I'm not sure if you saw this. The story's been trending over the last 24 hours or so. A construction worker in South India is being compared to the Olympic gold medalist sprinter Usain Bolt after a record-breaking win in a buffalo race.
I'm looking at the pictures.
Yes.
Are they computer-generated or did this really happen?
It did. It genuinely happened, and there are videos doing the round as well. His name is Srinivas Gowda. He's 28 years old, and he was competing in Kambala, which is a sport from the southern state of Karnataka where people sprint 142 meters through paddy fields with buffalo.
He's described as a buffalo jockey.
He is described as a buffalo jockey, and the video clip of him running caught the attention of social media celebrities in India, who suggested that India may have found its very own sprint king. Now, in the video, Gowda has apparently clocked 142.5 meters in 13.62 seconds, from which a timing of 9.55 seconds over 100 meters was extrapolated, and Usain Bolt's world record stands at 9.58 seconds. So,
but Usain wasn't being dragged by two massive bulls, was he?
That's true. So now obviously he's got the attention of a lot of people in India, including the country's sports minister, who's invited Mr. Gowda for trials under the Best Sports Authority of India coaches. The Athletics Federation of India is also willing to include him in a training camp. Now, he's obviously surprised by all this, and he's like, I don't know what's going on. Why am I being compared to who's Usain Bolt, et cetera, et cetera? So we'll see what comes of this. I mean, hopefully, you know, they've actually found someone who is excellent, and he's able to, you know, fly high.
Well, Tom Urquhart has a suggestion for the kind of footwear he might want to wear during those trials.
Are you ready for this one? I know there's been a lot of chat about breakfast during the business breakfast today. So that's why I've done you a favour and saved this one to last, because this is going to get the old juices flowing this morning when it comes to hunger. Talk about collaborations, talk about joint ventures. This is the business story of the day. Crocs. Are we all aware of Crocs? Yes.
Those plastic shoes.
Yeah. You either love them or loathe them. One of the footwear company. So they have got a reputation for teaming up with artists and brands, sort of weird, sort of geeky sort of sign-ups. They've joined forces with, get this one, KFC, the well-known purveyor of fast food in buckets and other ways. So the fast food company, who also like to do things a little bit differently. I see the quizzical looks on your faces. Okay, so the two teams have branded up to create the, and I guarantee this is an actual story. When I heard it first thing over the weekend, I went, nah, this is an April's Fool. Nah, this is fake news. Double checked it. The KFC X Crocs Bucket Clog is a thing. It's a limited edition shoe covered in a fried chicken print. Okay. These are the words from the KFC CMO, saying, combining the unmistakable look of our famous fried chicken and the signature KFC bucket with the unparalleled comfort and style of Crocs, these shoes are what fried chicken footwear dreams are made of. Now, I didn't know that those dreams actually existed until this morning, that is. Crocs, to their part, they've come on board and said that they are thrilled with this bucket-list partnership with Kentucky Fried Chicken that will bring fans an unbelievably fun and fashionable take on our classic clog. So, why is this so unique? The design. The shoe has the iconic KFC red stripe bucket on the base of the croc and comes with, it's genuine, it comes with two attachable charms that could be easily mistaken for the real deal. They look and smell like fried chicken. Have a look at the picture, seriously. So you've got the KFC design on your croc, and then you've got these two toggles that bang around on the top, attachable or otherwise, which basically look like a piece of fried chicken.
Right.
And not only do they look like it, they smell like it as well.
How do they smell like it?
Because they've created the eau de KFC, eau de chicken wing or whatever it is. Apparently, they are available in the spring. The chicken smell, it might be an interesting one over the summer months, remains to be seen. $60. $60 could be yours.
You can keep it.
They're so ugly. Look at them.
They're disgusting.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.